Well, friends, it is so juicy to be here. It is. I always love coming back to Unity of Walnut Creek. And as I've been experiencing you again this morning, I just have felt so welcomed. And the reason I believe I felt so welcomed is that you all know how to connect to each other. You know, it is rare that I'm in groups where I sense there is such emotional safety and such caring and such connection at a deep level. We know everybody is connected, but not everybody knows they're connected and knows how to act on it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it's juicy when you get it. So I'm just delighted to be here and so grateful to Reverend David, who is really the greatest supporter of my work in the Unity Movement. He has been hugely supportive over more than 10 years. And I just want to say thank you, David. I hope you're watching. Yeah. So I'd like to begin, friends, with a question this morning. You know, as we walk down our spiritual paths, we travel down these paths of life, I'm wondering if sometimes you've gotten stuck. Has anybody ever gotten stuck on their spiritual path? Yeah. So I'm guessing that in those moments when you were stuck, that you might have noticed some old irrational reactions coming up. Or maybe you just felt like you were floundering instead of following your heart. Or maybe you just felt bored. Anybody felt bored sometimes spiritually? Yeah. Well, I imagine we've all been there at one time or another. I certainly have. And when I looked back over my life years ago and looked at my spiritual growth pattern, I could see that there were some pretty long periods where I was stuck. And I found myself longing for a way to grow that was more consistent. But I didn't want something that was just reliable. I wanted something that was inspiring. I wanted something that would help me to feel fully alive and growing every day. So, like most Unitics, I went looking for that way. You know, tried lots of different things, and of course they all contributed to my growth. There's no one cure-all. There's no magic one way, one method that's going to take us home and give us that juicy feeling of growth every day. But after experiencing a couple of methods, I found a method that really worked for me, that accelerated my personal growth and help me to grow with joy. And that's what I was looking for. And so today I'm going to be sharing with you about that. And it's a method that takes full advantage of a powerful partnership, a partnership within, a partnership that's available to every human being. So the first partner in that partnership is called empathy. How many of you are familiar with Marshall Rosenberg's nonviolent communication? It's pretty popular, especially here in California. Well, Marshall is a master of empathy, and he defines it, as you see, as a respectful understanding of what others are experiencing. So Marshall discovered that naming our feelings and needs is a way to give ourselves empathy. When we name our feelings and name our needs, it's as if we are respectfully listening to ourselves. And then when we guess the feelings and the needs of someone else, we're giving them empathy. We're putting ourselves in their shoes, not diagnosing them or analyzing them or fixing them, just respectfully guessing what's going on, what feelings and needs are going on inside you right now. So As I learned this from Marshall, this art of empathy, I began to try it out in my life. And one day, I was coming down into Miami. We landed, and I was getting my stuff and preparing to step out into the aisle. You know how it is on these planes. We're all bunched together. Everybody's wanting to get out. And as I was there in the aisle, this young man comes from behind, just fighting his way through, like barreling, you know, just grabbing people, clawing people out of the way. So, well, I've been in a position where I needed to catch a flight. So I know how that can be, you know, that you really need to get somewhere and you get in a hurry. And so, you know, you want to get there fast and you might be a little pushy. At the same time that I sort of understood what might be going on for him, I noticed I was triggered. I noticed I felt annoyed, so now I'm starting my self-empathy. That's what I did that day. I felt annoyed, irritated, because I value respect and I value communication, knowing what's happening. And so I then felt less charge on this event. Just naming my feelings and needs helped me to, okay. We know that biologically there's a reason for that. That when we name our feelings and needs, that the amygdala of our brain goes, okay, I've been heard. So that's what happens. So as it turns out, I got off the plane and I ended up next to this young man in the long customs line. And so there I was, and I'd been practicing this empathy. And so I thought, well, I'm going to give him some empathy. I'm just going to give it a try. So I said to him, are you feeling stressed because you need to get somewhere fast? And his mouth kind of dropped. And he said, oh, he said, I've been so rude. He said, I'm so sorry. He said, my wife is about to have our baby any minute, and I can't control myself. You know, I'm just out of control because I just have to have some way to get home faster. Well, okay, so tell me more, you know. So then he's standing here telling me all about his wife and the whole situation, why he's away. And so by the time we ended the conversation, we were deeply connected, and he says to me, you remind me so much of my mother. And so I am so glad that I didn't settle for being annoyed. And the only reason I didn't is Marshall Rosenberg taught me how. That was the only thing that made the difference, is I knew how, you see. I never would have known how to give empathy in the past. And so whatever's coming at us in life, empathy helps us to process it in such a way we can give ourselves empathy and we can give the other person empathy. And then we're able to make life-affirming choices that move us forward, you see. I felt like I'd really moved forward with this young man. So now the second partner in this partnership is insight. Insight. So I know that Reverend David has been teaching you all about heart math forever, but especially in the last month. Is that right? Yes. Is there anyone here today who does not know the concept of coherence? I really would like to know, because, okay, I'll say a little more about it then. So Reverend David teaches heart-brain coherence. It's getting our hearts and our brains to work together. And the way that we get there is really very simple, that we go down into these beautiful hearts, focusing down, and then we breathe deeply and rhythmically down in the heart. And then we feel appreciation for something that's easy for us, like I use my dog, Millie. And in generating that feeling of appreciation, the heart has the power to pull the brain into physiological coherence. And when we're in that state, we are at our very best. We are able to make better decisions, solve problems easier, we're more intuitive, we're more creative, we're even more athletically graceful. We're at our very best because when we're coherent, everything in us is in alignment. We're in sync. We're in the flow, you could say. So what happens when we're in that state of coherence is that we're able to tap our best intelligence, aren't we? We're able to see things from a wider perspective instead of this narrow little view we've got. Somehow we move into the sky, we see a different perspective, and we're able to make the highest and best choices. So for me, when I'm in that state and an idea, a light bulb or another way of seeing it comes to me, I call it an insight. An insight. So let me share an example of an insight. About 2 years ago, I was having a horrible health challenge. And part of it was that I couldn't breathe out of the left side of my nose for about a year. And it was very uncomfortable, just struggling with it all the time to be able to breathe out of the left side of my nose. And so I went to doctors, and they gave me steroids, and then I'd get off that, and then I'd have it again. And just never could get it resolved, and I went on the internet, of course. And I looked at every home remedy that I could for fixing this problem. Well, finally I said, you know what you haven't done? You haven't really asked your heart about this. What is it I really need to do? Am I doing something wrong? What's causing this? What do I need to do? So I decided to go into coherence, and I listened for my insight, and I was never more surprised than I was at this one. My heart said, stand on your head. Sure. Stand on your head. Well, I hadn't stood on my head in about 40 years. But somewhere there was a memory of being able to do it. So, you know, I act on my insights. And so I went over and I got down on the floor, threw my legs up on the wall, and I stood on my head for as long as I could tolerate. And I got up and I could feel the air coming through. I was breathing. And so I did it again. And I did it again. And I did it again. Until I was breathing freely through the left side of my nose. Stand on your head. Where did that come from? We know. That was spirit. And, you know, I teach this all over to all kinds of audiences. So I call it insight. But for me, it's answered prayer. For me, it's spirit speaking through my heart. It's answered prayer. So once I learned these two methods, one from Marshall Rosenberg and one from HeartMath, then one day back in 2003, it occurred to me that these two would be incredible partners, that both of them cause me to make life-affirming choices that move me forward in life. And what would happen if I put the two together? How would my life go? And so I decided to try that. And so I tried it out first with a woman who came to me for counseling. Her name is Allison, and she's told me I can freely share her story. So Allison came to me, and she says, you know, I'm just divorced, and I'm starting to date again, and I really don't know when to say yes to sex and when to say no. She was very confused about it and concerned. And so I said, okay, Allison, let's really dive into your feelings and needs about this. So we named all of her feelings and got down to some of the core needs. Needs for self-respect, needs for connection with another human being. All these needs that are under the surface of our feelings. And so then we went into coherence, and she had an insight. She said, oh, I'm really clear on that now. But I'm still kind of confused about this part. I said, okay, let's go back in. So we did feelings and needs around the part she was still confused about. Just naming those feelings and getting down into the needs. And then we went back into coherence, and she had another insight. And when she walked out of my office, she was a confident young woman who knew exactly what she was going to do in this situation to take care of herself and also connect with another human being. So since that time, I've been using it in my life and in teaching it to others. Now, over time, I realized that there was more to know about this partnership between empathy and insight. I realized that, as you see on the screen, insight needs empathy to keep it humble. Why? Because I know that I know. You know, we can be very arrogant in our knowing. We need empathy to keep that insight humble. And on the other hand, empathy can drift down into misery. If we get too identified with our own pain or someone else's pain, then we can sink into misery. Instead of just having feelings and needs, we become feelings and needs, and it's all that we are. So empathy needs insight, needs the creativity, the awareness of insight to lift it up. So these two are truly soulmates. They need each other. And when we put them together, the synergy between the two accelerates our personal growth. It's efficient, it's reliable, and it's juicy. Because when you put these two together and you get answers, you feel so loved. You feel like, wow. An answer like stand on your head. I'm loved. I've been suffering for a year. Why didn't I listen to that earlier? You see, you feel so loved. And so, friends, as I taught this over the years, it's been about 2 years ago, I got to thinking about Myrtle Fillmore, who is one of the founders of the Unity Movement. And most of you know Myrtle's story. Myrtle had tuberculosis, and she was healing herself through affirmative prayer. And at the same time, Myrtle got stuck. Did you know that? Did you know that Myrtle got stuck just like you and me? We get stuck. Myrtle got stuck. She had been healing from tuberculosis, but then she got stuck. She was still sick. She hadn't healed all the way. And so Myrtle had a particular habit in her prayer time. Myrtle used a picture of Jesus as a point of focus in her prayer time. So she would talk to this picture of Jesus. And in this particular moment of her life, what she did was tell Jesus what was going on, how frustrated she was, that she looked at all her faults. She had, like, cleaned her consciousness. And what could it be that's blocking her? She was wanting clarity, and she was wanting health. So these were her needs. Her feelings and needs were poured out to this picture of Jesus. And so then we know what Myrtle's next step in her prayer routine was. What did Myrtle do? She blessed and appreciated every cell and organ of her body. She would move into this deep appreciation, praising her body and praising that it was designed for divine function. So when somebody's deep into appreciation, what happens, friends? Coherence. Right. Myrtle got coherent. And then guess what? She got an insight. Right. She got an insight, or what we could also call answered prayer. And the insight that came to her was kind of strange, kind of like stand on your head. The insight that came to her was, look among your virtues for the block. She was asking, where am I blocked? Spirit said, look among your virtues. So let me read what Myrtle said about that. In her book, How to Let God Help You, she said this: I thought that strange, this guidance, but soon it came to me. I had tried to keep my feelings to myself, taking great pride in the fact that I never let anyone know just how I felt when anything displeased me or hurt me. Now, I determined to handle all that came to me before I swallowed it and allowed it to weaken me. As I gained real poise and the ability to keep my thoughts and feelings truly free, I was healed. So, my friends, Myrtle was using this powerful partnership and didn't know it. Right? She was using affirmative prayer, but underneath that, Myrtle was so intuitive, she had stumbled onto what we now know because of science. What I'm teaching you about this powerful partnership is verified scientifically. But Myrtle did it intuitively. What did she do? She got honest about her feelings and needs, didn't she? She got honest telling Jesus about her feelings and needs. And then she got coherent, and then she got an insight. And that process is what we call today Be Peace, the Be Peace practice. And we also call it the connection practice. When we teach it in churches, spiritual communities, we call it Be Peace. And when we teach it in schools, universities, and businesses, it's called the connection practice, because it's about connecting to myself, to you, and to spirit. And so, friends, Myrtle was a model of this. Isn't that wonderful? Myrtle was doing Be Peace. And you know what? Jesus had a profound understanding of this as well. Do you remember when Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead? You all know this story from the Bible? I'm going to read to you what it says in John about that. It says, Mary was crying because Lazarus was dead. At the sight of her tears, Jesus said in great distress with a sigh that came straight from the heart, Where have you put him? They said, Lord, come and see. And then it says, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. So we know that as he's surrounded by all of his friends who are mourning Lazarus, and Lazarus was dear to him, that he had empathy for their mourning, for their sadness. Jesus wept. And at the same time, Jesus had an insight. After weeping, then he said to all those around, he said, But this event is for the glory of God. This is an opportunity to demonstrate the glory of God. And so Lazarus, come out. And Lazarus came out. And so you see, he had both empathy and the insight that lifted everyone above that human pain. And he demonstrated the glory of God. Now, when we partner empathy and insight, we don't usually have such dramatic results. But we do have results that, for me, are like a little resurrection every time we use it. Jesus resurrected Lazarus, but what we can do is resurrect ourselves. We can resurrect relationships. We can resurrect whole groups of people, can't we? You know, not long ago, I was scheduled to have a meeting with a man who had been put in charge of working out a negotiation with me so that our two organizations would be able to move forward in a partnership. The challenge was that every time I met with this man, he was difficult to communicate with. He would go way off on other subjects so that it was difficult to make progress. And also, if there was any little signal that that he perceived that his organization wasn't going to get their needs met, if there was just any perception that came his way out of his mind about that, then it seemed like he would belittle me or blame me. So I'd had that experience, and I didn't want to have it again. And so I knew I needed to do my B-Peace practice before my next meeting. And so I sat down, and I named my feelings and needs. I gave myself empathy. So I'm feeling nervous and uncertain because I'm really needing trust and connection and communication with this man. And I'm also needing progress. And then I guessed his feelings and his needs. And I guessed that he was feeling stressed and worried, and that he really needed security, and that he needed reassurance, and that he needed to matter. And so after naming these feelings and needs for myself and guessing his, I went into coherence. And I listened for my insight. And the insight that came was, less is more. Less is more. What's that about? Well, as I really looked at it, it was clear. I needed to use as few words as possible. I needed to get my request down to this much. Not to just step away completely and not get my needs met, but I needed to be clear on exactly what I needed and stick with that. And so I went to the meeting and sat down, and he started to talk, and I started giving him empathy, just guessing his feelings and needs. Of course, he wasn't aware of it. I just, you know, stayed connected with him, helped him to know I was with him. And so after guessing his feelings and needs for a time in our conversation, finally, I made my request. And he said, oh, sure, no problem, and we can do this, and we can do this, and we can also help you with this. Yes! You see, that's how life gets better. That's how life gets better when we employ our two partners within. These wonderful partners that are there for us all the time. So, you know, Jesus not only embodied these two partners and knew how to use empathy and insight, he also taught about it, when you really think about it. Let's go to the next slide. In Mark, it talks about a scribe who comes to Jesus, and this scribe says, Master, what is the greatest commandment? Now, I never cared too much for the word commandment. And so I'd like to interpret that. I think what that man was asking was, how is it that we function at our greatest as human beings? What is the greatest way for us to function as human beings? Yeah. And so, in answering, what Jesus said was, love God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Now, friends, when I am doing my B-Peace practice and I am processing in a way where I go deep into my heart, deep into appreciation, into coherence, and then an answer comes, that is the moment for me when I most know I'm loving God. It is so real. There's many ways to love God, including singing. Many ways to love God. But for me, when I go deep into that gratitude feeling, that filling my heart with appreciation, and then an answer comes, and I'm loving God, and God's loving me, and we are one. That, to me, is fulfilling this great way for human beings to function. Loving God with my heart, soul, and mind. And then Jesus also said, and the second is, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, Hello? What are we doing when we are being empathetic? We are respectfully guessing the feelings and needs of another human being. We are doing our very best to put ourselves in those shoes. How better could we love our neighbors, friends, than to put ourselves truly in their experience, as Marshall said? And so, it seems to me that what Jesus was saying is that when we love God and we love our neighbor, that then we are functioning at our very best as human beings. But before, I didn't know how. I didn't have the know-how. And so these wonderful methods from Marshall and from HeartMath, and the essence of them combined, you see, the synergy between empathy and insight that we can put to work on any issue that comes at us in life, that accelerates our growth, and we do it joyfully, right? What a joyful way to grow, because we've got these partners to help us. And we feel loved, and we feel happy, and we feel like we're making progress in life. So, friends, we've been teaching this in Costa Rica since 2004. And at this point, we've impacted about 40,000 students in Costa Rica. Last year, we trained 860 more teachers. And we're also teaching this in the United States, that we had a successful pilot project in Houston, and we are moving into all kinds of arenas, teaching it to business people, because don't we need this in business too? Yeah. All right. And so now our program in Costa Rica is located on the main campus of the United Nations University for Peace. I've been teaching there since 2010 to graduate students. They come from all over the world to the UN University for Peace. And so when I'm teaching that group of people, they are from different races, cultures, languages, from all over. And guess what? It works for all of them. You see, it's universal. Jesus knew that, didn't he? He said, these are the ways that will help you function at your best and be connected to each other, moving forward together. And so, recently, in February, I was at the University for Peace teaching a course, and I had the opportunity to talk with the rector, and I asked him if he'd like to have an experience of what I teach. He's a new rector from Chile, and so I just offered to give him a demonstration of what I teach so he would really know what I'm offering there. And so he agreed, and so I took him through an experience. He was having a challenge there at the university, and so I helped him to name those feelings and needs, and then we guessed the feelings and needs of the other people involved in that situation. Then I had taught him how to get coherent, so we moved together into coherence, and then he opened his eyes and he had an insight. Friends, our leaders need this, don't they? So, a new step in our vision has just emerged in the last 2 weeks, and that is a vision to have the building that's going to be ours. We're in the process of having our own building on the campus. And that building can be an institute for diplomacy, so that world leaders, through the language of diplomacy, can come and learn how to access their empathy, access their insight, put them together, and be able to lead for global progress. Doesn't it just make sense? So, friends, we can do this. We not only have the great words of Jesus on the two most important commandments, but we have know-how that we didn't have before. We have the how-to that wasn't so clear to us before. We can do this. We can embody it. We can teach it. And we can create all kinds of resurrection on our planet out of unnecessary suffering. Resurrect us out of unnecessary suffering. And when I'm here at Walnut Creek, I know it can happen. Because you all know this. So you are a model to the world of what it means to be connected, to embody this, and to bring resurrection out of chaos. Yeah. So, friends, let's continue to make it so. Shall we? Let's make it so. Amen. Yes.